Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the National Employment Network Payments conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press star followed by the one on your telephone. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Tuesday, November 29th, 2016. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Sean Wilcox. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Julie. Welcome and thank you for attending the All-EN Payments call today, Tuesday, November 29th, 2016. I'm Sean Wilcox, EN Payments Manager, and your host for the call. If you're a new employment network, we welcome you and thank you for working with the Social Security beneficiaries. I would also like to thank all our returning EMs who join us each month. We hope this call serves you in understanding the intricacies of the payment process for the Ticket to Work program. Joining me in our McLean office is Deborah Tennessee, Ticket Operations Manager, and on the line, on behalf of the Social Security Administration, we have Katie Scrivinger and Shannon Morgan. Thank you all for joining the call. Today we're going to discuss the following topics: ePay status update, most common diary reasons, earnings rules for the Ticket to Work program, ticket program available resources, and then our question and answer forum. So let's get started. In terms of our announcements, I'd just like to let you know you can check the status of ePay by viewing the announcement screen in the portal. The portal will display the announcement that ePay has started and a message when we complete processing an ePay file. Additionally, there was a Gov delivery message sent on November 21st informing of a portal technical issue. The technical issue is related to badge file uploads within the ticket portal. The message read, "Please refrain from uploading new files to check ticket assignability, open and close VR cases, and assign and unassign tickets until further notice. We will advise when you can resume processing your files." Our current ePay file processing began back on November 17th. Claims are processed by Social Security numbers instead of DUNS. The current ePay file contains a little over 14,000 SSNs. As of Monday, November 28th, our EN payment staff processed 3,900 total claims paid. As a reminder, you may submit your payment request through the ticket portal instead of waiting for the ePay process to run. Additionally, please ensure that your EN payment contact information is current. We email the payment contact for payment outreach messages and confirmation of possible split payments. We will now proceed to our next portion of the presentation, most common diary reasons explained. There are several different diary reasons used when payment requests submitted require additional information. Today we will review the diary reasons most commonly used. This information is listed to provide an explanation as to why the payment request was placed in diary and different examples of when these instances may take place. Diary reason awaiting proof of earnings. In the first scenario, required dates not on documentation. In this scenario, earnings evidence has a single date or dates not clearly marked. You may want to use supplemental earnings statement form if the pay stubs provided are missing required information. All evidence must include the pay period beginning, pay ending, and pay date. The supplemental earnings statement form is located in the form section of the Your Ticket to Work website. In this example, the employer-prepared statement lists evidence that does not include a start and end date. It is difficult to determine the pay beginning and end dates based on the only date provided, which is the check date. The required pay period start and end dates must clearly be marked on the earnings evidence submitted. This request would be placed in diary awaiting proof of earnings as a result. Here's another example of the same problem, evidence that does not include start and end dates. In this example, the earnings evidence submitted is a pay stub, and only the check date is included. The pay period start and end dates are not listed. This request would also be placed in diary awaiting proof of earnings. In this scenario, it's a work number version. The work number as of date requires a supplemental earnings statement to provide dates as of, could be pay beginning, pay ending, or pay date. It is recommended to use the work number report version with labeled dates that clearly define or submit a supplemental earnings statement. In the example above, the case is in diary because a payment request was submitted through the portal and a corresponding fax cover sheet has not been received by FSA. When the diary expires in 9 days, the payment will be denied for the reason insufficient documentation. The diary status screen is populated in real time. You can check the fax status by going to the Pending Payments for Me link from the main menu. Proceed to click the Actions menu. An option to show fax status will appear. It is recommended that you fax the required documentation as soon as possible. You will then be able to see the diary status on your pending payment change as soon as you fax in your evidence using the fax cover sheet. Diary reasons if earnings documentation is illegible. When documentation submitted is completely illegible, it may be difficult to interpret the information. Once this occurs, the document is inadequate to support the payment request. When you encounter a situation where the evidence is not legible or pay stub information is missing, you should use the supplemental earnings statement form. If the evidence is not legible to the EN, the evidence is not legible to us. Please try and send only clear copies of documents. An additional diary reason that is most commonly used is need FICA withholding. This diary reason is used because FICA withholdings are required. An employer-prepared earnings statement or an Employment Network supplemental earnings statement can be used if withholdings are made but not clearly showing on the evidence provided. The employer must also check the box that says, by checking this box and signing above, the employer attests that all withholdings required by law have been made from the employee's earnings. This provides confirmation from the employer that all withholdings were made. These withholdings confirm the beneficiary is not self-employed and the employer is deducting all required withholdings at time of payment. Awaiting state VR closure code. This diary reason is used when ENs submit phase 2 milestones prior to requesting phase 1 milestones. It must be confirmed if all 4 phase 1 milestones have been paid or denied. If the EN fails to provide proof of closure, if the ticket was previously assigned to a state vocational rehabilitation agency or valid closure code is not listed with FSA. It is recommended that ENs check the history of a ticket in the portal before requesting phase 2 milestones by accessing the check ticket assignability link from the main menu. A concurrent beneficiary has both a Title II and Title 16 record. Prior to the recent earnings rule change, this policy enables staff members to identify the number and rate of qualifying payments under Title II or Title 16 and only use earnings rules for the program if the beneficiary met ticket requirements. Title II, earn in a month, and Title 16, paid in a month. After the rule change, either earnings posted from Title II or Title 16 can be used to make a payment. In this example, the EN submits a payment request for Phase 1 milestone claim for August 2016. The beneficiary is in current pay for Title II and in suspense due to work in earnings for Title 16. The EN would be eligible for a milestone payment under Title II since the beneficiary is in current pay under Title II if the earning requirements are met. The pay stub submitted as follows. Pay beginning date at July 25th, 2016. The pay end date is at August 7th, 2016. And the pay date is at August 10th, 2016. The gross pay amount is $815. The earn in the month Title II amount for July and August is below trial work level. The paid in the month at Title 16 for August is above trial work level. The payment can be made for August 2016 based on the Title 16, even though that record is in suspense. We will finish the discussion with a review of what resources are available to you if further questions or need additional details about anything we presented today. Ticket portal available resources. The portal automates many operational functions you do throughout the day. Besides uploading payment request forms and viewing the EN payment status report, as reviewed previously, some additional automated features that the portal offers includes checking for ticket assignability, assigning or unassigning tickets, and uploading forms. TPM provides website resources for service providers. EANs can also visit the information section of the website to obtain additional information, resource documents, and training materials on a wide variety of topics. The Information Center also includes a listing of upcoming events, including conference calls, that service providers can attend. To access the Ticket to Work website, go to the yourtickettowork.com. The Secure Trading and Resources site was created to ensure the highest level of security for you and the beneficiaries you serve. You can only access the site by using the link included in your welcome letter you receive via email with your login information for the portal. The Ticket Portal User Guide is a resource that you have at your fingertips when using the Ticket Portal. The reference to consult before contacting us with a question. For new EANs, information on how to access the training and resource site was included in the welcome letter you received, with confirmation of your completed enrollment in the Ticket Portal. The EN Payment Help Desk is the preferred method of tracking the status of submitted payment requests. Its tenant is primarily the Ticket Portal, and it actually takes advantage of the real-time updates. However, if an EN is unable to make or use the Ticket Portal for any reason, it also has the option to send manual payment status for inquiries to the EN Payment Help Desk. ENs can also obtain clarification on payment-related issues, explanation of how EN payment staff apply ticket policies to make payment and payment denial assessments. They also answer EN payment inquiries received through the Payment Help Desk phone line. You can also submit requests to the EN payment staff for payment reconsideration or payment supervisor to review a payment issue. Outreach to ENs obtain payment-related documentation when EN payment staff report missing or incomplete information from payment requests that ENs submit. The Ticket Operations Helpline is also available Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Both the payment help desk and the system support desk are accessible by choosing option 1 and 2 respectively. The payment help desk is available to answer your questions regarding payment policy or status under the ticket program, while the system support desk has representatives available to assist you with any technical issues you encounter using the ticket portal, questions about the ticket assignments, or TPR-related questions. This will complete the presentation portion of our call, and I would like to start our question and answer session. Deborah, do we have any questions presented during the chat room at this time?
I will just, we just had one question. I had two questions here. The first one is, do the new earnings rules apply only for concurrent beneficiaries? And the answer to that is yes. If the beneficiary is not concurrent, is he or she is either eligible only under Title 16 or Title 6 or Title 2. So you would only have earnings under, you would have to use the earning rules under that particular program. For example, if it's a Title 16 only beneficiary, I'm thinking about the way that they post earnings information. If it's a Title 16 only beneficiary, then you would only have Title 16 information there, so you would have to use the Title 16 rules. If Katie or someone from SSA is on the line, if you have something to add to that, you know, you could just type in, but I believe it was the purpose of this was for concurrent beneficiaries. Well, we had a beneficiary who was eligible based on the pay status, and an example that was given here, they were in care and pay. But we did not have earnings posted under the particular program where the beneficiary was listed under care and pay. And the example here, it was Title II, they were under care and pay. So in the past, what we would do was wait to see at what point the beneficiary had earnings that were earned within a particular claim month, and then at that time we would make the payment. But if now, if the beneficiary is in concurrent, has Title II and Title 16 eligibility, whatever month that we have earnings that makes the beneficiary or the EN eligible for a payment the earliest, we will use those earnings. So, excuse me, if the beneficiary earned trial work level within a particular month, let's say it was March, but the paid earnings at trial work level was in the next month, April, we would use the earlier month of March. I'm not trying to get this confusing, but this is just the way we used to handle earnings, you know, apply earnings before when we process cases. But now, regardless of which rules earnings were posted under, whether they were posted under the month earned or the month paid, wherever earnings are posted that qualify the EN4 payment, we will use those earnings.
Thank you, Deborah.
Let's see. Here's a question from Linda Patino, and she wants to know, can you explain to all on this call about the 18-month look-back and beneficiary date of onset? Okay, this is the issue here. I'm going to give you an example of the particular inquiry I received. The rules for look-back to begin with. The look-back period, first of all, the beneficiary, we only use the look-back rules for beneficiaries with ticket assignments 2008 and later when we hit the new regs. So if the beneficiary's first ticket assignment date was prior to 2008, we don't even use the look-back rules at all. It only starts with beneficiaries whose first ticket assignment was July 2008 and later. As far as look-back is concerned, we have to be conscientious of the ticket number. Look-back rules apply to earnings between the date of disability onset and the first ticket assignment date. So if the date of disability onset was July 2014 and the first ticket assignment was in September 2016, we would look at earnings between the 2014 date and 2016 date. Of course, that's more than 18 months, but we would look at we use the same, pretty much the same rules for 18-month look back as we do for phase one milestones. If their earnings 1 month prior to the ticket assignment date, then phase one milestone would be excluded. If it's 3 months out of 6 months prior to the ticket assignment date, then phase one milestone two. This is only if you have earnings above trial work level. Now, let's say that beneficiary had one ticket, but in November of 2016, the beneficiary got a new ticket, and a new ticket, ticket two. The rules for every time a beneficiary gets a new ticket, pretty much everything starts over. There's a new date of disability onset, and we do not look at earnings, anything that was prior to that new date of disability onset. In other words, we would not look at any earnings prior to that new date of disability onset, and look-back earnings would not be included for that new date of disability onset. So if we had a new ticket that was issued in September and of 2016, and the EN submitted a payment request for November 2016, regardless of what was paid on ticket number one, it could have been 12, 15, 17 outcome payments. Ticket number two starts all over. It has its own value. It starts from the beginning. So what would be the first available payment would possibly be milestone claims, unless there was a earnings prior to that new ticket assignment date. And here we're talking about it would have to be earnings for October, because the beneficiary's new date of disability onset would be September. We cannot look at any earnings before September, and for the new look-back period, it would be any earnings between the new date of disability onset, September, and the ticket assignment date, which would be November. The only earnings that would be applicable to an 18-month look-back would be October. That's the only month between the new date of disability onset and the ticket assignment date. So we could only look at that. That would be the only exclusion. The same thing applies to case closures. If there was a successful case closure under ticket number one, and the EN who had the ticket prior to that, all phase one milestones were excluded, when there's a new ticket, it's a brand new ticket, we would not look at those case closures for that period on the first ticket. It would have to, the beneficiary would have to have received services from the VR after they received a new ticket, and we would look at that period to see whether or not it was a successful or unsuccessful closure after the new ticket was assigned. So just keep in mind that whenever a new ticket is assigned, it has its own value. We do not continue with payments from the prior ticket, and everything is just like it's a brand new ticket, meaning there's a new date of disability onset. Look at that date. Look at the ticket assignment date, and you can kind of judge whether or not there are any earnings for look back. If the beneficiary has worked between the new date of disability onset and ticket assignment date, there's some possible milestone exclusion. And I hope that answers the question.
Thank you. Do you have any additional questions presented during the chat?
Someone asked, is there any correlation with the onset date and the ticket mailing date listed in the portal? I can't tell you yes or no. What I do know is that whenever a beneficiary receives a disability award, they immediately become eligible for the ticket program. So I would think those dates are very close. Someone wanted to know, Linda Patino has written, you can find the new date of disability onset on the beneficiary's BPQY. So if there are ENs out there who don't know whether or not there's a multiple ticket or what the date of disability onset is, they can get that information from the BPQY. Stana has written this question, where do I put case notes in for my meeting with my customers? I'm not sure if this is a portal question, so could you be a little bit clear on that? Katie, are you still on the line?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. One of the ENs has asked, where do I put case notes in for my meetings with my customers? I'm not sure that that's where you will put a case note for meetings, or not. Could you answer that?
Sure. So the portal has case notes, which you can use, and we here at SSA and there at TPM, we cannot see the notes you put in there. That is for you to use as your own case management system. Notes about the beneficiaries, it is an option off of the main menu, and it's towards the bottom. That's where you would find the case notes if you were talking about something from the portal.
Okay, so Shanna wrote back, I keep my notes in my database. Is that okay? The answer to that is yes. Okay, this is from Kendra. What do you advise for us to do when the payment is denied because beneficiary benefits are not suspended yet for ES to receive payment for the outcome milestone and beneficiaries claim that they are not receiving any cash benefits? I'm not sure about that because if the beneficiary is not receiving cash benefits, they should be in a suspense or non-pay status due to worker earnings and outcomes would be available then. So even though this says the beneficiary benefits are not yet suspended, yet the beneficiary are not receiving any cash benefits, the beneficiary is not receiving cash benefits, they would be suspended. Cash benefits are paid only if the beneficiary is in a current pay status. Someone asked, how does parent death benefit affect Ticket to Work? And I guess this is a program-related, not Ticket to Work, but a program-related issue. I don't believe it affects Ticket to Work at all. The death benefit is stuff. I guess you mean the payment of the death benefit, that $355. I don't believe it affects the beneficiary, I mean the Ticket to Work payment at all.
Thank you, Deborah. At this time, I would like to open up our phone lines for our question and answer forum. Jolie, could you please advise our audience our phone lines are open for any payment-related topics or questions they'd like to discuss?
Yes, sir. As a reminder, if you would like to ask an audio question, please press star 1. Again, press star 1 to ask an audio question. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster.
While we're waiting, Deborah, are there any other questions presented during the chat feature?
Okay. Sherry-Ann, I hope I haven't just totally mutilated your name, but one EN has asked, I am experiencing the same issue with the beneficiary stating they are not receiving cash benefits, but I am not eligible for payment via the portal. Now, I don't know why. It all depends on the reason for you not being eligible for that payment. For this, since this is a specific issue, I would advise you to call a help desk on this, or you can give specifics about the beneficiary, you know, the SSN, so our EN payments help desk and look up the you know, information on that particular beneficiary to see what's going on with that as far as why they're not eligible for payment. Because for this, I don't know the reason. It may not be because you're not receiving cash benefits. Maybe it's something else. So you would have to submit that specifically through the portal unless you could tell me the reason, if there is a reason, why you're denied the portal, I mean, denied the payment through the portal. Someone, Linda Patino, asked this question. Could be the beneficiary is still receiving, I guess this is a question where they're saying the beneficiary is not getting a cash payment, but they're not in suspense. Could be the beneficiary is still receiving, you know, they're still eligible, I think is what she means, for payment. However, SSA is holding amount for overpayment, which means the beneficiary is not getting a check, however, not yet in suspense. I'm trying to think now. I'll have to think on that and maybe come back on another call with that, because I'm thinking about the coding of the records. Even if there is a withholding amount, I'm thinking about in SSI questions anyway, the record shows what's due and what's paid. So it could be something was due that month but not paid. That still wouldn't put the beneficiary in suspense. So I'm going to have to kind of look at that and come back to you with an answer. Then Marilyn Bavois has this question, or this, yeah, it's a question. If a beneficiary has a ticket in use with VR and VR contacts the EN for an upcoming case closure handoff before the case will be closed within a 90-day period for successful case closure, the beneficiary will not be in an in-pay status. If the beneficiary is not in pay status after the VR case closure, there would not be a ticket for the EN to sign, correct? Well, and I believe this is true. Yes, you're correct that before the case is closed, I guess you're saying there will not be an in-use status. However, there's that extended period of 90 days where the ticket may not be in use, but you still have that extended period to assign your ticket. So I'm trying to point, I'm trying to make the ticket should be available. There are situations sometimes where this happens and you're not able to assign a ticket, but it may be for another reason, like for failed TPR or some other reason. So if you find a case where the ticket was, it was a successful case closure and the EN is not able to assign a ticket and it's within that 90-day extended period, you should submit those inquiries to us and we'll take a look at those cases. Okay, and Shireen said, I called the help desk, and they said I needed to have the customer call SSA themselves because the help desk could not see the reason why. Okay, let me give you my email address, Shireen. It's DEBBRAE, as in elephant, TENNESSEE, at maximus.com. And send me an inquiry on that, and I'll see what I can figure out as far as what's happening with that case that you have. Okay, Janine has, when the 2017 TWP and SGA earnings amount changed in January, if someone is earning trial work level, I guess, or SGA with the current amount, but it changes, makes it where they are no longer earning that amount, does this stop pay request until the person earns the new amount? Let me tell you about the payment level. The levels are posted for each year. So if you're submitting a payment request for a claim month in 2017, the earnings have to be at 2017 rates. If you're submitting a payment request for 2015, the earnings have to be at whatever those rates were for 2015. So whatever the rates go up each year, when you submit claims for prior periods, those rates don't apply. It only applies in the year of the for those claims. So the answer to that is no, we won't stop to request until a person earns the new amount. As long as the claim is for a prior period, then you would look at, you know, whatever those rates are. Okay, Mary Lynn, is there a date that you expect to post the 2017 payments at a glance? And I didn't, and she's written, I apologize if you have already announced it. No, we didn't, Mary Lynn. We don't know this. We have to wait for Social Security actuary to come up with those new rates, and as soon as they do, we do post them on our website on a payment, 2017 payments at a glance. And for the person, Janine, who asked the question about 2017 trial work level and SGA earnings, on our website, we do have those earnings levels for prior years, so you can always go there and check to see what the earnings level were for a prior year's claim. For 2015, what was SGA earnings level? What was it for 2016 and 2017, okay? Someone wanted to know, can you please repeat your email? I don't know. Yes, yeah, I will repeat my email. If you're accounting some issues with payments and you need to send me something specifically, yes, you can email me, even though we do have a very capable staff manning our EM payments help desk. But my email, it's my full name, which is Deborah E. Tennessee, and I will spell it for you again. Deborah, D-E-B-B-R-A. There are two B's in Deborah, middle initial E as in elephant, and Tennessee like the state, T-E-N-N-E-S-S-E-E at maximus.com. Okay? That's it as far as I see for the chat room.
Thank you, Deborah. Jolie, do we have any audio questions at this time?
Yes, sir, we do. Our first question comes from a line of Olivia Kaufman.
Hello?
Oh, yes, go ahead.
Okay. So I missed, was having some technical difficulties, and I missed the first part of the call. Was there a set date for the payments that need to be generated?
What type of payments are you talking about? Are you talking about e-pay?
Yes, how we get paid, yes.
Well, if you're talking about e-pay and you're not submitting a payment request, we are processing, we have received the e-pay file, and we're processing those claims now. We just received the e-pay file, so we just got started on those claims.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, now someone, had I guess it was a question in the chat. It was from Linda saying that the 2017 levels were posted and they give the SSA website for the actuary. Can we use these? Those are earning thresholds. They are not payment rates. So, yes, you can go to, we have the earning thresholds of how much a beneficiary has to make for trial work level for 2017, what SGA is and what SGA blind and non-blind is, but we don't have the payment rate. We don't know what a phase one milestone is worth, you know, what that amount is. We don't have those yet. Kinder has written, if I assigned a ticket later date to start providing services, will that affect the payment? For example, if I started the services in October but assigned a ticket and placed the beneficiary into employment in November, can I submit the claim on for November in this case, or do I have to wait to submit the phase one milestone one for December claim month? You would need to wait for December. The first available payment month that we can make is the first month after the ticket assignment date. Okay? Any other questions?
Yes, ma'am. Your next question comes from the line of Katie Zachary.
Hello. This is Katie Zachary. Hi, how are you?
Okay.
My question is probably a simple one. But I have a situation where I have a beneficiary who worked with our state VR agency in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Her case has been closed, and she can be reassigned.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, if she's reassigned to our EN, when it comes time for payment, would that be a split payment, or would it go to REN?
Okay. Let me tell you, split payments are only between ENs. If that state agency was under using the cost reimbursement method, then no, it would not be a split payment. If that state VR agency served that beneficiary as an EN, then yes, it would be. Do you know whether or not that beneficiary, whether or not that state VR agency was acting as an EN for that beneficiary or not?
I do not know that, nor do I know how to figure that out.
Okay. We should have that case closure information. You could even ask the beneficiary, did they assign their ticket? They may not know what that means, but we should have case closure information in our system, but if not, you can contact their VR agency and just check with them to find out whether or not they were acting as an EN for that beneficiary or not. Now, if they were not, and it was a successful closure, you would be eligible for payments, but not any phase one milestones if there was a successful case closure with the VR. If it was an unsuccessful closure, all payments may be available. The only other thing that may not be available might be some phase one milestones due to look-back earnings, but, you know, that's something we would have to check when we submitted the payment request. So the answer is, if that VR acted as an EN, it would be a split payment. If the VR did not act as an EN, you need to find out what that case closure is. And if you do find it was successful, then you can submit a payment request for phase two milestones if the beneficiary meets that level of earnings, which would be at SGA.
Okay. Got it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Jamie Schmidt.
Hi. I have a question. Last month on the payments call, it was brought up that somebody had a ticket that was terminated in error, and you said that we could submit something through the payments help desk to try to have that rectified. Well, I did submit that. I submitted our information with an SSA 821 and other supporting documentation, proving their trial work period months and all of that, and they created a work case like I was requesting a payment, even though I didn't use the manual payment request form, and denied it, stating the ticket was terminated. I know the ticket's terminated. I would like to have it reinstated. Is there a better way to go about this?
Yeah, the reason I think that you got the instructions to do that, because most of the time we get an inquiry. I submitted a case or a payment request through the portal, and I wasn't able to because it said the ticket was terminated. How can I get paid? Then we tell you to advise you to submit a manual payment request, and then we'll look into it. In this case, you wanted both, I guess. You wanted your payment because you submitted it initially through the portal, but more so, you want to check out the ticket termination to see if
I was kind of going to do it in steps, do the ticket reinstatement first and then request a payment.
I guess
they just assumed kind of that we just wanted payment. Is there, can I submit it again?
Submit it again,
the documentation
please,
and tell you
if you could, it would have to be encrypted, though, but if you could send that to me, Deborah Tennessee, and put something in an email or whatever, it would have to be encrypted. You need someone to investigate if it was an accurate ticket termination. Then we can take it from there, because we'll look to see if that was the case. If it wasn't accurate, we will talk to the SSA staff who can get that corrected. And if there are any payments available, we'll take the next step and make sure you get paid.
Okay. I thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Linda Patino.
Hi, Linda.
Hey, how are you?
Okay.
Just a clarification. There was a couple of things you had mentioned about individuals, if they said that they weren't receiving any benefits or any cash mm-hmm. benefits at the time mm-hmm. that you're trying to get payments, you know, and mm-hmm. you can't get an outcome. Well, the thing is, we have had that situation. We've had it where in the past, maybe that individual has worked, they had an overpayment, and they didn't negotiate the overpayment amount that they would pay back, and mm-hmm. they ended up losing a portion or almost all of their benefits or cash mm-hmm. benefit based mm-hmm. on paying that overpayment back. And because of that, they're not getting a check. But mm-hmm. the thing is we can't get paid.
You need to send those into, when you had that situation, send those to me.
Yeah, it was an interesting one. Another one that we had found out, the person had reduced hours and had not reported their earning change to Social Security, mm-hmm. even though we had, and they were mm-hmm. not getting a check, but they should have been eligible. And there were some things there, and it caused us, you know, to have some issues. So we have to be careful when we're doing those kind to make sure, you know, get a BPQI to identify how much that person's receiving or if there's have an overpayment. It's always better to investigate than for you to have an overpayment as an in or for that individual to have an overpayment because it hasn't been properly handled. Mm-hmm. It's just
okay.
work but, that we've had to
those,
live by.
Mm-hmm. I guess, and again, it would be because you're saying unless it's a case where there's an overpayment and the beneficiary has been suspended due to worker earnings, even if there is an overpayment, of course, we would continue with the outcome payments because the beneficiary's overpayment has no impact on ticket to work payments to EN. But if you're saying the situation, their record is being affected by the payment status because of the fact there was a withholding, you know, it's still, the point is this. It's almost, it's two actions that's handled in one, almost. There is a payment, but it's snatched back, okay?
Right.
For withholding. So I'm interested in seeing some of those that if you have any, send them to me, and I would like to see what the record looks like on those. Because, again, what we look at is what's due versus what's paid. And the record, that we look at really pretty much what's due based on what we make our assessment on. So I'm thinking of the way the record looks. It will show, for example, $400 payment is due for the month, but the payment history will show a $400 payment was withheld. But I'm looking at what was due. What was due shows me that, you know, they were eligible for payment that month. So I just like to see what a record looks like,
right.
you know, when that situation happens so we can kind of investigate that. Because I don't know that I've seen any records like that where that we've denied them. But if the pay status is showing something where we can't make a payment, I'd like to see what it looks like.
Yeah, it has been a while since we've had one of those. We've had at least a couple that I know of in the past, and that's how come I was aware of it. And when Kinder brought up that question, was that, oh, yeah, I've had that experience. So it's been a while for me. Maybe that's something that might be the situation with her client. So I will look and see, and then I'll share that with you if I find it. But I just wanted to share that. That was an experience that we encountered in the past.
Okay, because if that's something we see and we can find out more about it, it'll be a topic on one of our calls so you can understand it better.
Okay.
In the event that you run into that. Okay.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And your next question comes from the line of Aaron Marks.
Hi. Yes, so my EN uses the milestone outcome payment system,
mm-hmm.
and I've had a question about what most other ENs do who are using that system. When someone's been working for a while and they're in the outcomes status, they're not receiving benefits, and, you know, it's probably the experience of many ENs that some people are really hard to get a hold of and promise to send in information and then they don't. So I was just wondering, should I keep pursuing them, you know, to send in the pay stubs to me, or should I go ahead and let it go to the e-pay status and just wait it out? I was just wondering what other ENs do for the difficult clients who, you know, don't send in their pay stubs, even though they're working.
I guess that all depends on, you know, the EN itself or how much you need to have that payment, right, you know, what your finances look like, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, we will eventually get that information, but some ENs can't wait that long. Okay, so I guess those are the ENs who try the work number and other methods to try to get some earnings information.
Right. Well, certain of my clients aren't on, aren't working in a place that is listed through the work number, so I can't use that system. But they are working, which is great.
Yeah, because they're not getting a cash benefit, so we know that they have earnings somewhere.
Right, and they're in a nice career job, which is the ultimate goal, so I'm happy for them, but I just don't want to keep bugging them when, you know, they just don't send the information after promising it.
Well, I don't see any responses from other ENs in the chat line, so I'm not sure what they do, but as much as possible, still try to get it, especially if you want to get paid fast, within a couple months or so. Because it does take us some, it all depends on how the earnings are reported to Social Security. If we're relying on quarterly earnings that we get posted to Social Security records, those earnings may be 5-6 months old by the time we get them. Because
I've seen that happen.
And then again, if there's some, especially for SSI, SSI, they seem to post those earnings pretty fast. Monthly earnings there, you know, that being a needs-based program, they could easily be overpaid.
I think most of my clients are SSDI.
Okay. And for SSDI, that's a difference because it's going to be harder, that's all I can say, to get in SSDI.
Sure. Okay. I just wanted to check to see if anyone had any tips.
Oh, I did have some comments from in the chat as far as what other ENs have done. One EN said, I have gotten permission from the client to get information from the employer. Another one said, collecting paycheck stuff has become more and more challenging, even if the beneficiary is willing to provide it to the EN. Kinder has written, we continue to follow up. We don't wait for the e-pay. And another said, I do this quarterly and sometimes semi-annually. So I guess they are at different intervals following up and trying to get the earnings information. Okay. Linda said,
Go ahead.
Linda has written, you can also use this work number if you have an account. For the last EN, she basically said they don't use, that employer doesn't use the work number. Okay, and some say they're just waiting it out for the e-pay. It's getting harder and harder to get the pay stuff. So, it just varies between ENs what they do.
Thank you, Deborah. Jolie, do we have any other audio questions presented at this time?
No, sir. At this time, we do not have any further questions.
Thank you. Any other statements or questions in the chat room, Deborah?
Yeah, I have this statement from Deb Reardon, and I think we need to push this to SSA. It states, I have tried to have my clients obtain the BPQY from the local office, and the local office states that it's over $100 to get them. And I think that's something we need to send up to SSA. Deb Reardon, could you tell me what state, in the chat, could you let us know what the local field offices are, where they are? What state you're in, because if someone has to follow up with this, we have to give them a little bit more information. Okay. Oh, it must be someone else who wrote it. Kat Hilger? Oh. I don't know if... Okay. I'm getting all kinds of stuff now that, based on that one... particular comment about the BPQY, so I'm not sure what they're saying. It's different responses. Marilyn LaVoie said our EN has also encountered where the beneficiary is being informed there is a cost. So this seems to be a problem for a number of ENs, and we will make sure that SFA gets this message.
Any additional questions, Deborah?
No, that's it.
Jolie, do we have any audio questions that are being presented at this time?
No, sir. There are no audio questions.
Okay. Okay. As a reminder, TPM provides an opportunity to all ENs to discuss payment-related topics on the last Tuesday of each month during the All-EN Payments Call at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The full transcript and audio for the All-EN Payments Call are available on the Ticket to Work website under the Events and Archives section. Our next All-EN Payment Call is scheduled for Tuesday, December 20th. This will conclude our presentation for today. Thank you all for listening, your attention, and participation during the call. Please have a great evening.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's conference call. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines.